Hello, everyone, and welcome to another special episode of SYNGAP1 Stories. Today, we've selected some of our favorite moments shared by our guests from our first year. It has been my honor to get to know each amazing person and to put their unique stories out into the world for all of you to hear. I began this podcast to help spread the word about coping with SYNGAP1 and the hardships of living with a terrible disease, as well as the joy of each child brings to our lives. I also wanted to celebrate the community SYNGAP Research Fund has created. You have heard me laugh and cry over the past year, but every guest shares one thing in common. We are all desperately hopeful for a cure. SRF has funded about $5 million in grants in the past 5.5 years, but unfortunately, raising money never ends until a cure is found. That's why I'm hoping that you will support SRF today for Giving Tuesday, or whenever you're able to listen to this episode. Our children, their siblings, our families need your support. Your donation, whether it's $10, $25, $50, or $100, is important and we believe will be life-changing for our families. It is these donations that will fund our next grant that perhaps finds the cure. And just a reminder, all donations go directly into research and programs to help SYNGAP1 patients. Your donation goes that much farther with SRF and is what sets us apart as such a special organization. Thank you, dear listener, for joining me on my journey to educate the world about SYNGAP1 and for sharing our tears and laughter. Now, please enjoy this special episode, and if you can, please help us cure SYNGAP1. We kick off with SRF's co-founder, Mike Gralia.
So as part of your role at SRF within this community, you talk to a lot of families who are very newly diagnosed. What do you tell those families on day one? When they first reach out to you, what's the number one thing you tell them?
Yeah, I feel like on day one, what I want to tell them is call me back in a week. Because on day one, they're still in shock. And so we probably talk about too much. So the message I lead with is have hope. Like I can't get into all the details. We don't have time. There's stuff I'm not even allowed to tell you about. Blah, blah, blah. But there's a lot of good work going on in science and in companies to find therapies for our kids. So don't believe what you might have been told when you were given this diagnosis, which is, sorry, it's a rare genetic disease. Almost no one has it. There's no therapies.
Right. I mean,
it's technically true, but it's going to be outdated soon. So number one is have hope, right? Don't give up. Number two is get the best doctors you have. Like if you are in just a normal part of America and you're not next to a major medical center, break out Google Maps, find the nearest medical center where they see kids and get on the list. Mm-hmm. It's easy when our kids are young, if you're dealing with a young one, think, oh, they're not that bad. It's not, this isn't that bad. And to try to minimize it, right? Mm-hmm. But that's a mistake. This is a severe neurological disease and it progresses. And the sooner you get really advanced care for your kid, you don't want to have to go find that doctor when things are bad. And unfortunately, right. As time goes on, and the symptoms of this disease grow. I don't want to say this disease progresses because it's not a progressive disease. It's not a degenerative right. disease. Our kids will not die of this disease.
Correct.
But the symptoms will keep coming and
correct.
They will grow with severity. And so I tell people, one, have hope and build a medical team now because mm-hmm. it's not always easy. And so, and once we get therapies into kids, we want a cure. Our mantra is cure SYNGAP, but but it won't be 100% for all these kids. So we need to build care and support around them and around the family. And then it depends on how old they are, right? If I'm dealing with young kids, I say one thing, adults say something. I've done older patients, I'm just listening to them because they've lived my future.
Right.
I don't have much to tell them. They just didn't know it at the time.
While we don't hear it enough, Mike highlighted the necessity that we all should have hope. Nancy Kessler takes that a bit further with her advice earlier this year to stay positive and to take care of ourselves. Take a listen.
Yeah. All right. So let's end with what piece of advice can you give to other SYNGAP families to live a happier life with SYNGAP?
Well, I think that to look for the good, to try to stay positive, to try to hold on hope, and to make those connections, I think, is so important. To have something on your calendar to look forward to also, something for you to take care of you, because it's really hard. You have very little time for yourself and time to do the things that will give you the energy you need to sustain and to be able to do what you need to do. But taking care of yourself, I think, is really important.
You're so right. You are so right.
Making connections in our rare community is something I've consistently talked about on this show. Finding your people, finding those of us who instantly understand, is vital for our health and our understanding of what this disease means. SRF is that community for us. Corey Basden discusses just how crucial finding your tribe is.
So when your original genetic test came back and there was nothing hit, what was the next step?
They ran more. And we kind of thought it was crazy. We were like, well, we know it's not genetic. You know, she didn't get it from me and she didn't get it from my husband. Right. So it's not hereditary. What are you going to do about it? You know, it's genes are genes. You can't change them. And so what's the point in even knowing what's going on? Until we got it, we went to our next neuro appointment. It was in July. And went through the whole thing. And then she's like, oh, yeah, by the way, I got your genetic report back. And we're like, yeah, that's kind of a big deal. Would have liked to know that from the beginning. And she reads it off, and it's a bunch of gibberish that nobody understands, and apparently not even her. And she said, she's just got a form of mental retardation, and it didn't come from you, and it didn't come from your dad. Or her dad. So
that's all she said.
That's literally all she said. And I said, well, that's it. I mean, and she said, yeah, there's nothing you can really do. And she said, it's not in any literature. So I immediately was like, well, can I get a copy of that genetic report? And she looked at me like I had two heads and was like, oh, sure. If you want it, you can have it. And I was like, yeah, I want it. Give it to me. So, that ended our appointment, and the receptionist printed off my stuff and I went home for the evening. And, as soon as I got the kids to bed, I started Googling every single term on that page. I didn't even know where to begin because none of it made any sense. Heterozygous, de novo, pathogenic, likely pathogenic. I was all Greek.
Yeah.
And I happened to type in SYNGAP1 because that was one of the little gene things in the box. And sure enough, a flood of information. And I was like, man, we've got a reason. I didn't know what it meant, but I spent the next 24 hours like finding everything I could. I went to Facebook, typed it in there, and sure enough, SYNGAP Research Fund and the whole community. And then I was like, oh, there's others like me.
Like Corey says, finding the diagnosis, finding the community can be really hard. Callie Worth takes us to the next step with her advice to not just find your tribe, but to lean into it. She is so wise, and I really love what she has to say.
What would you tell a new SYNGAP family who reached out to you if they were just diagnosed this week and got a hold of your information? What would you tell them?
My go-to would be to say, lean on your community. Reach out. Because speaking from our experience before we received the diagnosis, it was really isolating. To have this kid that has all of these really unique issues, and some of the behavioral issues, there's some shame that comes around that. And I think when you get that diagnosis, it's almost like your ticket to say, oh my gosh, all of these people kind of know and understand what's going on. And it's freeing in a way. So I tell people, like, if you have a if you've recently gotten a diagnosis, message, call. Like, there are so many willing people and amazing families in our group of parents, siblings, sisters, etc. So yeah, community, community, community.
Lauren Perry is one of the first people many of us connect with in SRF. After you dive into this community, she highlights the crucial aspect of volunteering for studies and surveys. It can seem endless at times, but that hard work of getting involved with the research, the science behind SRF, is what's going to pay off and lead to a cure and therapeutics for our children sooner rather than later. Check it out.
What are you most proud of in the community, in the SRF community these days?
Oh, I mean, okay, since I work for SRF, I get to see more things, but we every once in a while are starting to recruit for studies. It's been amazing. Like, it's happening more and more, and we're trying to get more. I mean, one time we got people, 20 people within, I mean, it was like 2 days, and it was like, yeah, here you go. Here's all my information that we need. Here's this, this, this. And it, like, that makes me so happy. And it shows me just how much people really want to be involved and want to help their kids. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's amazing. And how much everybody comes through for stuff like that when we need them, or filling out surveys. Yes. We always hear from people like that are doing, like, whatever, even on the Facebook groups, whatever kind of poll is happening. We can get so many people to fill these out. And it's rare, as far as I know. Other communities aren't like this. People keep telling me that. And I think it's great. I know we all want to help our kids. And it's something that's really good that we can all put this in and take the time out to fill out the surveys and whatever. And I don't know, it makes me really proud of everybody and happy, because we're working really hard.
We are. I know, I say it all the time, we'll do anything for our kids. It might look different from one family to the next, but we will all do anything for our kids.
Heather Bench tackles another hard aspect of being a caregiver for a Syngapian, self-care, and asking for help. We all seem to admit that this is one of the hardest things for us to do, but it really is so crucial. Heather says it so well.
Throughout the years, how have you attended to your own mental health when dealing with all of the complexities that her diagnoses have brought? How were you able to support yourself and your family?
So I would say I neglected myself for so many years, especially because I tried to be this superwoman type mom that could take care of everything for everyone. But like, by doing so, I just didn't allow myself to have that time to recoup. I just always told myself that I don't have time to be sad, to be angry, to be anything but present. And that was just a lie that I told myself and I bought for a long time. And again, as the challenges became more, you know, with Michaela, I learned that I was going to need to ask for help and be able to accept it. And that was probably the harder part. Asking was one thing, but accepting was another, because, you know, we're the only ones that know how to do things for our kids, right? And letting someone else in to try to help is like, not even a possibility. But I learned that it was okay to ask for help. It was okay to accept help. So that was a big part of, you know, my mental health is stepping back and letting others be what I needed them to be at the moment for me, and taking that time to just regroup. And I realized that actually at the end of the day, I'm stronger for it because of others.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So the piece of advice that I'm hearing is don't neglect yourself early on.
Yes.
Realize that when we are stronger and healthier, we can support our loved ones better.
Right.
Danielle Williams is someone I will never forget. She is a powerhouse of an advocate in Australia, and as you probably remember, is mom and caregiver to two daughters with SYNGAP1. Her admission of how hard and dark things can get is a refreshing admission of self-awareness.
Those early years were, I explain it as we were just under a dark cloud, because we weren't, Jaylee wasn't sleeping. She would have these 2-hour screaming fits twice a day, once in the middle of the night, once during the day. Literally, you could not console her. And she was going through lots of different medications that weren't working. In fact, the first one caused toxicity in her. So the first one, Epilum or sodium valproate, that was 3 months later, she was like a zombie, wouldn't get up, was horizontal. I just called the pediatrician and said, what can I do? This is not right. My daughter, sure, she's not having seizures. She's not doing anything. She's horizontal. This is not cool. So we got a hospital admission. So we were going through all of that. Actually, when I was breastfeeding Dali, I was in hospital with Jaylee because we were weaning her off the sodium valproate and getting her onto, it was, I think, phenytoin or Dilantin at that point. So it was, I remember the hospital machine of because I was breastfeeding, I had to use this big hospital machine because I couldn't have Dali in the hospital with me as well. So those years, dark, very, very dark years. The expressing element of it was full on.
Oh my gosh.
And I feel like now.
How did.
Sorry, you go.
Oh, no, please you.
I feel like things have completely changed now. We feel like we're no longer under that dark cloud, just because the girls have grown a lot. They're a little bit more independent, not too much, but we have the diagnosis. Mm-hmm. We know what to expect from them. Mm-hmm. Their seizures are relatively controlled, not completely, but relatively controlled. And the biggest difference, the biggest change for us is sleep. Our eldest, who didn't sleep for 10 years, Jaylee, she now sleeps. So I cannot tell you. For 10 years, we got used to just operating on no more than 2 hours of continuous sleep a night. For 10 years. So we just got used to it. It's astounding.
I don't know how can you get used to that?
Well, I didn't have a choice.
While Danielle is able to remind us that we are not alone with the darkest parts of this disease, Ashley Evans, co-founder of SRF, reminds us to be happy with the good moments when they happen and not to worry too much about the future and what it may or may not look like.
Okay, and one piece of advice for any SYNGAP family about how to live a happy life with SYNGAP.
I think for me, it's been about loving what is, trying not to think too much about the future, because the reality is we don't know what the future will bring. I do try to let myself grieve when I need to grieve the gaps between my own expectations of, which I didn't really know I even had, right? My expectations of raising a child. But also, and also loving Tony as he is and where he is. You know, he is really excited right now. He's really excited about playing Nintendo with Mario. And like, if I sit on the couch with him and watch him play Mario Nintendo for like 50, he loves that. And like, I can sit there and kind of pat him on the knee or hold his hand while he's doing that. And like, he's smiling at me. He's so happy about it. Like, is it what I wish my kid was? Sure, no. But like, that's where he is now and he's happy. And so like, I'm trying to let myself, you know, be happy with that. I watch the way, I actually feel like John teaches me so many lessons in this way. Like, John just beats him where he is. Sometimes Tony's upset and Tony goes to the other room. But a lot of the time, like, I went upstairs and this morning and they're sitting on the bed together. And he's like, John was like wanting Tony to read to him, you know, and say, Tony, read this to me. And Tony was kind of reading and kind of making up words, but like they were connecting. And that, at the end of the day, that's what it's all about, is connecting and loving.
Yeah. Oh, I love that.
Everybody I have spoken with has had really good advice for all of the caregivers in our community. Monica Harding, though, has some very special advice for the dads of SYNGAP1 patients.
I encourage parents, especially fathers. Mm-hmm. I think it's easier for moms to do, but dads need to have those relationships with other fathers to share. It's equally as hard for moms, but for dads, like to see their kids, especially their sons. It's heart-wrenching for them. I have to say that, especially to have the severity that Jackson has. Like, you know, Aaron's like an Iron Man. Like, you know,
right?
Literally. He does Iron Man. Like, and that's his way to check out of life. But you know, Jackson can barely hold a broom. He can't do a cycle. A cycle on a bicycle. Right. He can't run. Parents need that outlet, and they need to be able to share their concerns, their journey, their sadness. And of course, they need to find that safe space to be able to do it. And they need to be able to cry about it. And then, of course, you need to be able to express your joys and your accomplishment with your SYNGAPian. Not try to hide, I'm not saying hide, but to be more transparent about your challenges. And you're going to find out who your real friends are and the friends that can't handle your stress. And that's okay. That's okay, because our lives, mm-hmm. our journeys, they're tough. They're hard.
No matter who I've interviewed, and really when I've interviewed them in their journey, everyone has a starkly similar beginning to the SYNGAP1 diagnosis saga. Stephanie Decker shares the hardest part of learning that diagnosis.
So then November comes, it's probably like the week before Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And I'm like in the car and I just get a call and she's like, "Hey, I have your test results." And I'm like, "Oh, it's only been 4 weeks. this is not on my timeline." And she's like, "Oh, hey, we found something." And I was shocked because I thought for sure we weren't finding anything.
Right.
And she's like, "It's called SYNGAP1. And I'm trying to find like a scrap of paper to write this down because I have no idea what she's talking about.
Yeah.
You know, and she's just kind of telling me this when she's going through. And I'm pretty sure she's reading right off like the SRF website of all of the things.
Yeah.
And because she doesn't know anything about it either. You know, she had to Google, find a source she could find quick and just read off from the list. And,
yeah,
you know, she says could be seizures down the road. She says intellectual disability. And I just remember her saying, like, when she's all said and done, you know, she kind of asked me how I feel. And she's like, "I know the seizures are probably like the hardest part of this whole thing." And I usually don't say a lot, but I just woke up and I was like, no, the fact that she is never going to live on her own, never take care of herself, never get married, never have a life. No, that is the hardest part for me.
Yeah.
And she was just like, "Oh, sure. Yeah, I can see that."
Suzanne Jones always seems to be able to easily cut through everything that comes with a SYNGAPian. And moderating expectations and making modifications to prevent meltdowns is one of those key things that we all experience. Check out what she has to say.
Tell me one piece of advice that you can give to other SYNGAP families about how to live a happier life with SYNGAP.
Well, I think we've kind of talked around it a bit throughout our conversation, but I just feel like really working hard to modify your expectations for your family. And it's easier said than done, but you really have no choice to change kind of how you approach travel or dinner out or even dinner at home, family activities. Everything you do is impacted by your SYNGAPian. And so you kind of have to embrace it And we have. And, you know, sometimes we have to get, if we happen to be going somewhere where we need to stay in a hotel room, we know you better have two with a door, because the, mm-hmm. we need to be able to block her off at 7:01 because she has a very strict bedtime, you know, and mm-hmm. does that mean that maybe we can't travel if we can't afford it? Yeah, sure. Or does it mean maybe we aren't staying with everybody else yet that we want to be with? Sure. But you just have to make these accommodations to make it more pleasant once you're there. And the same goes for dinners out for our family. If we want to go out to dinner, we better go at 6. You know, if we want to eat at home, she's eating at 6 because we're trying, because she needs a ton of sleep. She, despite being almost 13, she goes to bed around 7. She sleeps. I mean, not always through the night. We have issues like everybody else. We don't even want to go into the fact of that I don't sleep in my own bedroom. That's an issue I need to deal with. I feel like you got to make modifications, and you might not want to, but you might as well embrace it because you're going to need to. Because that will make anything that will make things calmer and more peaceful and keep your precious little Singapian from having a complete meltdown. Well, I say do it. Even if others disapprove, if I have to sleep in the bed with her, then I will. I want sleep too. Mm-hmm. You know, like whatever it is, I don't care what people think. Like, we're doing the best we can, period, end of story.
Yep. Yep. Wholeheartedly agree. No judgment. I live in a judge-free bubble. And if you if you judge me, you are not in my bubble, and that's fine. But don't pop my bubble.
Suzanne mentioned making modifications to both our lives and our Singapians' lives. Summer Cat Nanny discusses a major modification, introducing an AAC device and experiencing a neurotypical moment as a result of that modification.
We have an amazing, amazing speech therapist who's like, you know, known in Brooklyn for being an expert on AAC devices, who I stalked heavily.
That's a thing but, we do.
Yeah, we do. Watch out for us. But then one day she just like used that little pointer finger and she communicated something on it. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, had this interest in learning more about where things were on it and like telling us things. And it's just, it was like, I think anytime with our kids, just like this light bulb clicks where something that they've been practicing or they did like 4 months ago, like all of a sudden it just happens. And so it was really cool to see that and really see how it's progressed. And, you know, she like comments on things now and like, you know, with her babysitter, like you'll just hear like, stop. And actually I got into my first fight with her the other day. Right now she's like really into her Leapfrog laptop, to my like complete chagrin, because I hate that thing so much. It like makes an appearance where it's like very heavily used for like 3 weeks and then it goes away and then it will come back. And so she was sitting there and she was pressing laptop and I was like pressing no. And then she was like looking at me like with her like little disgust and then pressing laptop. And I was like, no. And we did that probably like 3 or 4 or 5 times. It was like, I was really enjoying it.
Something all of us as caregivers struggle with is anticipating and preventing negative behaviors. Mike and Tony had a major negative behavior incident at school this year, and Jackie Cancier reached out and shared some really great advice with him. Check it out.
I think the bigger problem is that, like, after 2 hours of being fine, the guardrails were just completely tossed out the window. That, to me, is the bigger problem.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's also a big problem with, well, there's so many big problems. But I think as our kids get bigger and stronger, you have to remember, our kids don't feel pain. Like when you get, if you've ever been punched or slapped, you're like, ooh, that hurts. And then before you do that to someone else, you're like, wow, if I hurt them, they might be mad. If you punch or slap a Singapian, they'll be like, oh, because they barely feel it. So when they punch or slap, what do they think they're doing, right? So, And then the trouble is Tony's 85 pounds. He's been on modified Atkins diet, which means high fat, high protein, no carbs for 5 years. Boy is lean and strong. You know, this one of our members of our community, one of the leaders I shared with on Thursday, Jackie can't see her. Her daughter is a young adult, I think. She's really wise. She's really articulate. And she wrote back to me almost immediately. And her message was so on point. Let me just pull it up real quick. She said, "Oh, Mike, I'm so sorry. Unfortunately, as more and more of our diagnosed patients start getting older, I truly feel we will see this exact scenario replicated again and again. The general medical field is not ready for SYNGAP1 dysregulation. Treating with common practices for autism, agitation, or even bipolar schizophrenia just won't touch it. This is the point. SYNGAP1 is in a class of its own. And we need doctors, and I would inject their therapists, etc., who are willing to recognize these novel cases, and think outside the box." And then she goes on, and she says, "The name of the game is keeping her as stable as possible with high levels of appropriate medication to calm the synapses." I agree. "Oh, this is a key point. Only qualified, trained adult support present." And then she says, "Quality over quantity. As even one person who has the wrong tone or body posture can trigger her. And then a balanced environment that provides enough mental stimulation to keep her from being bored, but not so much sensory stimulation that it overwhelms her." Yeah. And then, no, it gets better. She's so smart. And then if any of those three elements are missing, she destabilizes. This is the analogy I love. "A snowball becomes an avalanche very quickly. So I have learned to be hypervigilant to the fall of the first snowflake, so to speak." And, you know, with Tony, the first snowflake was a bag of pirate's booty, right? He wanted this kid's food. And there was no one there to be like, "No, Tony," or to hold Tony and say, "Hey, can you give Tony 3 pieces of popcorn? Because then I'll be happy." If that kid had been like, "Here's 3 pieces of popcorn," never happened. But you can't say, "Hey, some third grader didn't share his popcorn." Right? That's not real life.
Right.
Vicky Arteaga is another one of SRF's international powerhouses among our ranks. She echoes the importance of self-care and therapy.
So many of us just haven't prioritized ourselves. So to hear you say that you've had a therapist for a while and that has been something that has helped you is really reassuring, because I think we all need to prioritize that self-care a little bit more. How long have you had your therapist?
I think it took me longer than I should. I probably, from the culture could be, or just personality, I thought I was strong enough that I was going to deal with everything. And until I started, it has been almost 2 years is when I did really realize how much and how important and how much it was needed to my sanity. I think I was, you know, borderline depressed, and I wasn't really admitting it. And it was on time, and it has been a great, great help. I still think I need more time for myself. I need to do I wish I could say exercise and meditation. No, nothing like that. I wish, probably in the next, you know, interview, if we have any, I'm going to say that, but not this time.
Perfect.
But just to be honest, I think just living the best you can, finding joy in probably simple things is how I cope. And just friendship, just going out with my friends for brunch or lunch and not talk about SYNGAP at all. Just being me, happy, light. I don't know. It's just light conversation. That's my thing.
Yeah. I love that. I should probably do more of that too.
There are few couples better known and loved in the SRF community than Sydney and Brett Stelmaschek. Emmett is one of the most severe and pronounced SYNGAPians we have among us, and they are so strong to open up about Emmett and his aggression.
This, like, came out of somewhere. Somehow you learned that you either you feel better when you do this. This is calming for you. You know, maybe sometimes you get what you want because you do this. I don't know what, you know, I don't even know if they know exactly why that is something that just continues to repeat itself, but it certainly has. And, you know, now sometimes when we're in really bad seasons, like if meds are off or we've made a change, especially over summer when the change was that school wasn't in as usual, we would have days when Emmett would like get up, come across the room to really come after you, to bite you, it, like, to hit his head on the floor.
In an act of intentional aggression due to some event that happened that he was either displeased with or like
felt threatened by, overwhelmed by,
it was anxious because of. And that's like, that has been the hardest daily part of Emmett's like journey right now, is just figuring out, number one, how do we protect him? Number two, how do we protect ourselves? Number three, how do we understand exactly what it is that is causing him to react so viscerally and violently to the world? And like Sydney mentioned, you know, bad days over the summer because of med changes and lack of school. But then even on like days where I think things are going really well, I get him ready for school. I feed him breakfast. Everything's going fine. We're laughing. We're watching the iPad. And then I go to put him in our minivan to get him to school. And as I'm buckling him in, he bites the top of my head and starts screaming at me. And this is a routine we've done so many times. I haven't had a problem with it in months. And then all of a sudden, I'm now highly on guard again of, oh, I can't ever just presume everything's okay. I have to be watching every single stimuli he's taking in order to understand, is he okay with this or not? How do I protect myself or not? I left myself vulnerable. I got hurt, but I also, I want to find a way where like we make the world happy for him.
All of our SYNGAP patients have difficult moments, and we learned from Brett and Sydney how hard those moments can be. Julie Miles acknowledges those moments, but reminds us to have patience and that the good times far outweigh the hard.
It's hard to remember that in those moments, in the moments where Miller is just, you know, having, as we say, like a SYNGAP snap, and to walk away from that and remember that, he was created perfectly and he is a masterpiece. And I have to remember that because, in those moments, it's hard not to, it's hard to remember that, you know, it's hard to remember all the good. And so I would, that's something, advice that I've given often, to just, remember that the good is far outweighing the bad. And I try to remember something. I'll try to walk away from that and say, oh gosh, when Miller did this, it was so funny or so cute or so sweet. Or Miller's starting to say, I love you, mama. Like, remember that. Mm. Like, remember those moments as, you know, as I'm walking away from a bad snap, you know. And another, that's a lot to say, but another thing is like, lean into your community and let them in. Because we didn't for a long time. In fact, we actually did the complete opposite and walked away from our community because we were in such deep grief and sadness and living in a very dark place because we didn't know what to do. And now we can look back and say, don't do what we did. Lean into your people. Let them in and let them help you. They want to. They love you and they love your child. They love your SYNGAPian. And so let them in. Teach them about SYNGAP. Teach them about SRF and let them love on you because they want to. So that is something that I always, I'm like, you know, let your people in. If they're asking, it's because they want to. So that's a lot of advice.
I think we all need to hear that more often. So that's great advice. We should probably just put that on loop.
One of the main threads throughout everybody's story and advice is to just stay positive and to remind us to have hope. And Nancy Kessler just sums it up so nicely with this next clip, and I just had to share it again.
And also for other families who have older children to know that they should get DNA testing also, because they can find out what's causing it and they can become part of a community. They don't need to be alone. And yeah, it just makes such a difference to have, just even to be in talking to someone who understands and gets it. It's just wonderful.
Yeah. All right. So what piece of advice can you give to other SYNGAP families to live a happier life with SYNGAP?
Well, I think that to look for the good, to try to stay positive, to try to hold on hope, and to make those connections, I think is so important. To have something on your calendar to look forward to also, something for you to take care of you, because it's really hard. You have very little time for yourself and time to do the things that will give you the energy you need to sustain and to be able to do what you need to do. But taking care of yourself, I think, is really important.
You're so right. You are so right.
Peter Halliburton reminds us that while we have to remain hopeful, we have to remain committed to the cause and helping and jump in and raise money to fund the research, because that is what changed our families' lives.
Shortly after his diagnosis, I, went out and did what every parent does today, go out and scour the internet and, see what I could learn about SYNGAP. And very quickly, I came across SYNGAP Research Fund. And I was really drawn by the fact that SRF is so focused on accelerating research for SYNGAP, and that really resonated with me. And so I initially just went out and set up a fundraiser page with my wife, and we went out to our network and, tried to see what we could do in terms of raising money. We raised, somewhere around 25 grand within 48 hours or so. And
that's not bad at all.
It wasn't bad for a first fundraiser, and I didn't really know what I was doing at that time. And so that caught Mike's attention a little bit, and he reached out to me and said, who are you guys? And tell me about you, because, we're still kind of an early organization, and you guys just kind of popped up out of nowhere and started this fundraiser. And so that is kind of what really started the whole story around me getting connected with SRF. At the time, the organization, as you mentioned, was still kind of in the early stages. There were really just a few volunteers that were kind of making things happen then. But I really just liked the direction and the strategy behind SRF and where it looked like things were headed. And so I just jumped on board, and it was kind of then that Mike said, we really need somebody to lead the development and fundraising efforts. And he said, you're in sales. So that seems like a good fit for your background. You're used to asking people for money. And I said, I have no nonprofit experience, and I have no, fundraising experience for nonprofits, but, I'm happy to jump on board and learn as we go. And here I am, coming up on 4 years later, almost at this point.
To bring it all home, here's a clip of me discussing how Kevin and I gained from personally connecting with others who share our experience.
He said, I can't tell you how much I gained from just being around these three guys. And not only were they in a car with each other for 3+ days, just up, somebody was in the back seat sleeping most of the time, when the other two were driving. But he said, aside from that, I got to meet with these other families along the way, both in New York City and then in LA and in Indianapolis and in Colorado. There were a couple of stops along the way where SYNGAP families came to meet them as they were charging. And he said, that sense of community around SRF and what this organization is doing for our community is irreplaceable. You can't supplement that any other way. He said, I loved it. I would absolutely share that experience with anybody I could possibly tell. He said, there's a fundraiser going on upcoming in a few weeks. It's the gala. I want you to go to it. You'll learn a lot. And so I said, okay, I will go to this. And so a lot of you will know and appreciate how difficult it can be for one parent to get away when you have to leave your SYNGAP child with the other parent and the rest of the family and the other caregivers. It's just not an easy problem to solve logistically. But he was so adamant about how strongly his experience affected him when he was on the Kinderborn run. He came back and he said, you need to go to this. You need to go be with other people who share this experience. And that's exactly what I did. I was able to meet Brett's wife. She was able to attend the gala as well. And it was just so moving, so encouraging, you know, to talk about this shared, devastating, but shared experience that we all have. And just to like open up with people who get it and you don't have to apologize to, you don't have to feel bad about, you know, wanting to talk about this nonstop because it's on your mind all the time. Whereas, you know, other circles of friends just don't quite get it. And that was very eye-opening to me, like to know that these are my people. We may not know each other, you know, face-to-face in person. We may not have anything else in common ever, but we have family members with SYNGAP. And that brings us together in a very real way. So it was very, for me, meaningful. Just the best possible experience I could have asked for. So that's probably my biggest takeaway from what I can espouse from being involved with SRF. So at any chance that you ever get to be with someone who has a child or a family member with SYNGAP, I highly encourage you to try to make that happen because it is so worth it. Having people in your corner, in your camp is key. Highly recommend that.
I really hope you've enjoyed this episode. It has been my absolute pleasure to get to talk to you and get to know all of these different families and our patients through this platform. It has been, as I've said it in multiple conversations, very cathartic, very heartwarming, to very easily connect with those of us who just get it. We share this sad, but bond that is irreplaceable in so many ways and just not understood by the general population. So to be able to get to know all of these families has been very rewarding for me and something that I hope that everybody also feels that sense of connection and togetherness, a sense of tribe and community. I started this for that purpose alone, to bring us a little bit more close since we are so scattered among both the United States and the world. And our patients are precious. We don't quite get that hands-on in-person experience with each other near as often as many other patients of diseases do. There's not quite the resources out there for SYNGAP1 yet. So I hope that you've enjoyed it. I really have. I'm really looking forward to meeting more families at the conference. I'm recording this on November 26th, 2023. So if you're listening to it before we have our conference in a couple of days, know that I'm so excited to get to know each and every one of you and to bring more people into the fold of our community. And I've had such a good experience this year. I've really, really loved it. I really just can't say that enough. It's been such a pleasure and an honor for me. If you want to share your story on this platform with me and have a conversation for all of our other families and caregivers to hear, please reach out. You can always email me or Ed, and our emails are in the show notes. I would be thrilled to bring more of you into this platform. I also want to thank Ed for being my producer and really my manager throughout all of this. If it weren't for him, I would not have been able to get this project off the ground. So thank you, Ed, from the bottom of my heart. I really appreciate everything that you do for me on a weekly basis, if not daily almost. Thank you.
And finally, if you can donate to SRF for Giving Tuesday, please do so. The details are also in the show notes. Thank you all.